For a little bit of inside baseball, for those that don't know, I mean, pretty much everyone, none of you know this, but our top story for the whole week was actually the Google Pixel 3a deal that made its way
for July 4th.
Yeah, and a lot of people are actually really, really mad at us about it.
Excuse me.
Our comment section is blowing up with rage. Wait, essentially.
Wait, about I haven't followed this. What's that? Why are they mad right now? Because it's cheaper?
Yeah, so our headline said Google Pixel 3a is $200. And I think the Google, for some reason, picked up this post very heavily. And people are not happy about the fact that it's only Sprint.
Ooh.
Which
is fair in terms that it's Sprint. I can't fault them for that.
Yeah, and so I sympathize because I would not want to move to Sprint either, even to save 50% off on a Pixel 3a. That was our biggest story by far, but it was not the most important story. What do you think was the most important story?
So the most important story, was it on the days escape me, but we got wind of a new future build of Android Q on Wednesday, was it?
It was a day.
Yes. On Wednesday. And yeah, so we learned about this future build of Android Q. We were able to explore it in depth, and it shows that how Google is going to fix gestural navigation is by adding this back sensitivity. So at the moment, you can swipe from either side of the screen to go back, and it's kind of a nod to how iOS does it, with a swipe on the left edge taking you back. But Android Q's take is you can also swipe on the right side to go back. And the biggest issue this has caused is with navigation doors, because it's very hard to slide out a navigation door when you have this back gesture in effect with the new gestural navigation. So Google is going to let users set a sensitivity from low to high with four increments in between. So we, speaking with the person who has this build of Android Q on their device, it's a marked improvement.
Yes, this is just like one of those fundamental problems. Google's just trying to figure out how to make their gestural navigation better with this release, and with Android Q. And it's definitely a little bit of an overhaul compared to Android P. And this was one of the biggest problems that arose out of the changes they made. Obviously, you can't swipe back from the left side and also have a swipe in from the left side to open a navigation drawer or a hamburger menu or whatever you want to call it. This, to me, I don't know about you, but to me, the fact that they had to build this workaround of a sensitivity setting is a sign that this was a bad idea in the first place.
So if we want to go to the root of this problem, I think it's a fair criticism of what Google is doing in gestural navigation is that they're copying the iPhone and that they don't really have an inspired... The reason for switching away from the Pi version isn't inspired. There's no fundamental vision for them beyond what they said about screens are bigger and we want to minimize navigation. But that's the argument they're making. But it looks so much like the iPhone.
Yeah. Well. Let me just like try and hash this out a little bit. What do you think would there be a downside if they just got rid of the back gesture completely?
Yeah, because it's too tall. The screen is too tall.
So for you, it's about being. It's like having to reach that top left corner within apps. That's the.
Yeah,
that's the big problem.
Yeah, if I can no longer do it at the very bottom, I need another way to do it.
Yeah, and on iOS, obviously the answer they have to that is just being able to swipe in from the left side to navigate back through pages. We've had this conversation, but that's just not an option for Google, it seems like. And so it seems like they're trying to figure out a way to basically. I think the gestural navigation in iOS is kind of dependent on the fact that Apple has this patent or whatever they have. I still haven't found it, but I think there's actual intellectual property that allows them to have this back swipe in from the left gesture, go back in apps. And I feel like the gestural navigation on iOS is dependent on that.
Yeah. Like,
the gesture navigation system doesn't work without it. Because like you said, on Android, in this case, we're seeing Google's workaround is they're trying to do some kind of swipe in from the left to go back thing, but it's not the same. And without it, you're stuck pressing a back button that's typically in the top left. Now this is my big question. And I just wonder if this is something that Google's thought about. Do you remember when Google Tasks first came out? The new
yes.
Google Tasks?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had the I don't know what you call it.
It's a bottom app bar.
Yeah, the bottom app bar. So my thought at one point was, okay, maybe Google can, maybe the compromise, instead of trying to copy the iPhone and do some kind of swipe in from the left back gesture, which is what they've done, I thought maybe the compromise was going to be move to the bottom app bar for just as a standard and push that across.
Yeah. Apps.
And then you would have a back button that would be at the bottom left corner and it would be in every app.
Yeah. So I guess the Google's big issue is it's a long time issue of enforcing new designs and new paradigms on third party apps. Like right. in the ideal world of Material Theme, the full Google material theme, there would be no navigation rules anymore. Everybody would be using a bottom bar with tabs. That's right. if Google were able to enforce like the newest design patterns every year, and apps were able and third party developers actually enforced it, adopted it, then this would be much less of an issue. But the problem is we have so many legacy apps with navigation rules and so many of Google's apps right. with navigation rules. So it's right. so they have to build in the system level. And this is the very hard task they have right now to solve.
Right. Well, anyways, what else was in this build of Android Q that's notable that we managed to find?
So Google Camera 6.3. Sometimes Google releases updates for Google Camera alongside major Android versions. There's no real pattern to it. Sometimes they release updates over the App Store. Sometimes they tie major version releases. And what happened was this new version of the Google Camera app makes a very key change to how Night Sight works. Instead of it being a mode that you have to access in the More tab, it's now in the central navigation of Google Camera. So you can swipe right twice, or you can just tap on the bottom controls of Google Camera, and you can jump right into Night Sight. It replaces panorama mode, which I don't think most people use, and it's so much more convenient, so much faster to access the Pixel's best feature right away now.
Yeah, and it makes total sense because Night Sight has been at the forefront of their marketing for the Pixel 3 for the last year. And to have a feature that's literally on billboards be buried in a menu.
Yeah.
That was kind of a funny issue. And it's, yeah, so it's good to see that they're doing this. They should have done this in the beginning, seems like.
Yeah. Do you know how like Night Sight can pop it when the scene is dark, the camera will automatically pop up this pill thing? Try Night Sight.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's still there in Google Camera 6.3, and I find it so annoying to be taking a picture when it's dark and having this pop-up appear. So
yeah, because now it's right there at the forefront, so...
Yeah, they need to...
Being offered it is a little bit redundant.
Yeah. Which I guess it still makes sense. Like, here, people click what pops up on the screen most times. So it, like, helps with education, but at the same time, it's annoying, and I wish they got rid of it permanently.
Yeah, that's one of those funny, kind of like old design rules where it's like, if you need a feature to educate people on a feature, then maybe that feature wasn't designed very well in the
Yeah, and I guess there's some people since Nightsight launch have said have called for Google to make it Nightsight the main camera mode. I mean, to integrate it into the main camera.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about that?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not like I'm really not a super. I really don't take many pictures. Period. So, I mean, really, I take pictures when I go on vacation or I'm doing something notable, you know, and which is like how many weeks a year am I out, you know, away from home, like doing something that's not sitting in front of a screen. You know, when you sit in front of a screen for 50 hours a week for your job / life, you know, it's like there's not much to take pictures of. It's pretty sad. But yeah, so like the week I went on vacation to Zion National Park in Utah, that was awesome, by the way. But you know, that week I found myself using Nightsight a lot, and it never crossed my mind to think that it should be just built into the standard camera app. I mean, I think it makes sense that Google leave the, like, basically, I mean, at the end of the day, Nightsight is an algorithm that's changing the appearance of your photo. It's not, yes. It's not the photo. Yes. It's closer to being a filter. And
yeah, no, that's a good way. That's a very good way.
It's closer to being an Instagram filter, in my opinion. And so I think it's good for those that would like to take photos that are as realistic a depiction of what they're seeing as possible. Although you could argue that in many cases, the Nightsight results, even though they're doctored, are closer to reality than the standard in some cases. But I do think it's very, I think it's good to make it clear that this is not doctored and this is doctored, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's very true.
So what else do we find in the Google Camera 6.3 teardown?
So I guess the biggest, well, let's save the biggest news for us. So we spotted the teardown revealed a McFly mode, which Kyle Bradshaw thinks is the ability to rewind. So maybe this is a video feature or maybe a motion photos. It's obviously a Back to the Future reference, so we're not sure what this new mode does yet, but that's one of them. Yeah. And another interest.
Well, is there a chance that it might be like Instagram Boomerang?
Ooh, that's interesting.
I mean, rewind kind of, it might just be another word that they're using for the same feature, which basically...
Branding.
Boomerang is like, it's like a motion photo, and then it rewinds the motion photo real quick, and it kind of just like boomerangs back and forth.
I don't know how I feel about that. And again, it's kind of a filter. No, it's not a filter, but...
It's kind of a live photo, but it's a specific kind of live photo, kind of. I don't know.
So the Pixels is called Motion Photo. Who uses Motion Photos is my question, basically.
I don't know.
Or even live photos. I don't.
I turn them off at every chance I get.
Yeah, because they increase the file size and all that. So yeah. McFly mode. So that should be, that may be interesting, but I don't know how I feel about putting like an actual boomerang feature in the Google Camera app. I feel that might be a bit.
Yeah, I already feel like the Google Camera app is too bloated, and it's already having performance issues compared to the original launch on the original Pixel.
Yes.
So if anything, I would like them to take out half the features that are in there and just focus on performance.
Yeah. There's so many features, like the actual Google Clips device. Nobody uses Photo Booth, I think.
Yeah.
Playground is fun. Time lapse when
I've never used Playground, not even once.
Yeah. Slow motion. Yeah, slow motion works. Photosphere, which was such a cool thing that launched with the Galaxy Nexus, I want to say, and it kind of didn't go anywhere. Oh, maybe the Nexus 4 photospheres. But anyways, that's a tangent. Selfie tips was another, speaking of gratuitous features, we saw the Google Camera app maybe popping
this
up
makes
suggestions.
Me cringe.
So it might be cool if it's factoring machine learning. So like we said, I don't think anybody uses photo booth mode, but if Google can add actual tips using that machine learning engine.
Can we talk about how cringy this string is? This specific string?
Okay.
This specific string that Google has added to the app. This feature is not live yet, but it seems like it will be. This string is called selfie angle description, and it says, quote, research shows that selfies are best taken from above with the camera pointed downwards. I just have so many problems with this. First of all, who is defining, what independent organization defines what a good selfie is? What's the basis by which research is quantitatively determining what selfies are good and which selfies are bad?
So,
are they saying that some people take selfies where they look really ugly and these are the ones that research has shown are bad, and if you take them from a certain angle above you, then they're going to create a more attractive angle? Is this what...
I
don't get it.
I'm 100% sure that research is Google's machine learning algorithms. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what they mean by research.
What basis are they comparing against? What is the ideal selfie, Google? I want to know. Because if you know, the world needs to know what the ideal selfie is and what your AI algorithms are being trained to compare against.
Okay, I feel like I've heard this advice before. Like,
I've heard this advice. This is absolutely, I mean, literally my Gen Z sister, I think back in 2015 or something, I was taking a selfie and my sister was like, you know, she was like, "You're doing it all wrong. You have no idea what you're doing." And she was like, "You have to go into the app and you have to turn on the, you know, whatever the lines are that like photo into thirds."
Grid
and
lines.
She's like, you know, you have to use the grill lines and you have to aim your, like, line your nose up with one of the corners.
Oh,
and like,
my gosh.
You got to have to take it from a, you know, a 30 degree angle above you. And she ran me through this whole like process for how to take the best selfie. So, yes, this advice is not new.
Mm-hmm.
But just the way that this string conveys it.
Oh my god.
It's not like, "Hey, here's a tip. If you take your selfie from above, you might look better," or something. It's like, no.
This is
quantitative research has proven. has proven that if you take this selfie from below, like our AI algorithms are telling us you are, then you're going to get half as many likes. On Instagram. We know it because we've done the research. It's just like,
oh my god.
Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway.
Raise camera for a better angle. That's the other the other string. Anyways, I'm off my soapbox now.
Yeah, so the main course here is we saw a reference to the Pixel 4 in this Google Camera app 6.3. Specifically, we saw references to Coral and Frame, which are the code names for the Pixel 4 and the Pixel 4 XL, respectively.
Which we first reported,
yes,
if I remember correctly.
Yes, in last month, actually.
A while ago.
Maybe earlier. April, I think. So we saw those code names before, and we're seeing them again. But the real juicy bit is the fact that this camera app suggests that the Pixel 4, that the second lens on the back side of the Pixel 4 will be a 16 megapixel telephoto lens.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I welcome it. I know most people want a wide angle because it's a more tangible benefit. But zooming, everybody wants to more closely zoom into their subjects with their photos. So I think if Google can do it well and beyond 2x, which in fairness, I've never really seen the benefit of a 2x zoom by itself. It's never enough, in my opinion. So if Google can do something cool here, it's a big bump, maybe. And they have good they always have good software. So I hope that they're doing something very up close and zoomy.
Yeah, so I think, I think actually one of the best benefits, so like going back to the, what was it? What was the first iPhone to have a telephoto? Was it iPhone 7?
Yes.
Going back to the iPhone 7 with dual camera and telephoto, I don't think that having the telephoto hardware itself was really the killer feature there. I think the killer feature was that you could tap the button right above the shutter. So right above the shutter, there was a button, and you could tap that button and go to 2x, zoom in to 2x, and not lose any resolution. So the killer feature is not having the telephoto lens, in my opinion. It's having the ability to be one tap away from a zoomed in photo that doesn't lose resolution. Mm-hmm. And that's in comparison to the current experience on the Pixel and other devices historically, where it's kind of just a game of trying to pinch your way in or drag left and right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying anything about the quality, because I think the Super Res Zoom on the Pixel 3 does just as good of a job. And I think it's been proven that some of the 2X on the Pixel 3 is just as good as the telephoto back, like the telephoto from the iPhone 7, because of Google's algorithms and stuff. So I'm not saying anything about the quality, but the convenience of being able to just quickly tap into 2X and not lose quality is awesome. And I think that's what we will see Google do with the Pixel 4. And I kind of have a further theory, you could say, which is that I could see Google combining what they've learned with Super Res Zoom with a telephoto, which could basically be Ultra Res Zoom or Res Zoom or something like that, where, you know, it's with a telephoto, obviously you'll be able to go to probably 2x without losing any resolution just natively. Uh-huh. But imagine having a telephoto and going to 3x with Google's algorithms, you could probably go to 3x without losing hardly any resolution at all. And maybe even, I don't know, 4x, I don't know what that would look like. It probably start to get really grainy at that point. But I just think that it can be really powerful combining what Google's been doing with AI with the actual hardware.
Yeah. Thinking back to the iPhone, they have two lenses for portrait mode, correct? Is that's the also the other cell?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so they didn't I don't know how it is now, because the iPhone XR, yes, has a single lens and it still does portrait.
Yeah.
I think that back when the iPhone 7 launched, they didn't have the technology to do it without the second lens yet. And I think since then, now they can do portrait with a single lens.
So
on the iPhone XR.
Yeah, that's
so I think they were just behind on developing that algorithm,
and software,
it being up to their standards.
So, okay, Google, the Pixel 3 has single camera portrait using machine learning. So my fear is that they're just using it to improve portraits and make them even better. I really do hope it's a
telephoto.
Yeah, I really.
Well, that might be part of it. I mean, I could see them doing both. I think I definitely could see them doing both. I could see them. I mean, having this hardware will let them take their existing software features and make them better. It seems like, and that would include portraits. And I would wholly welcome that as well. If Google can be like, yeah, we've taken a whole other step forward in portraits, you know, our portraits on Pixel 4 are so good now that you don't ever see those weird obfuscations and, you know, you know, weird kind of, hairs that are clipped off and, you know, other kind of other things. You know, if they can say, yeah, we're at a whole other level now and we don't have those issues, then it would make the Pixel 4 stand out with portraits too. Although I don't think that you can really get to perfect without a real
gigantic lens. Yeah.
Right. So But they could probably get even closer if they have the hardware.
Yeah. So,
it'll be really interesting to see. I personally, like I said, I'm not a camera guy, so I don't really care about having wide angle that much. And I do agree with you that one of the problems with wide angle is the kind of the
distortion.
The distortion. And that would be cool, though, to see an algorithm that fixes the distortion issue.
Yeah, because you're really compacting reality there.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the newest feature that Apple just released in iOS, which is it when you're having a FaceTime and you're looking at the screen, they're actually distorting your eyes to make it look like you're looking at the camera. So you can have a FaceTime call with the other person with it both looking like you're looking at each other, but you're actually not.
Mm.
And that, I think we'll see similar technology like that in Google's side of things.
Yeah.
With both the rear facing and with calls and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how the Pixel 4 stacks up and what, because Google, if they want to keep maintaining this claim to we have the best camera, they've got to stay at the front of the pack. And I felt like the Pixel 3 didn't do enough to differentiate. Did things.
Yeah.
But I mean, even, I don't know. You can load the Google camera. Well, didn't NightSight come to Pixel 2 as well?
Yeah, it's all of them have it. Even the original.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So it's like the Pixel 3 itself, the hardware itself, didn't really do much to differentiate.
No, they did like the photo booth machine learning thing, which is a specific feature to the Pixel 3. But again, I'm not sure how many people actually continue to use it.
Right. Right. So anyways, that's this unreleased beta of Android Q and Google Camera and some Pixel 4 things. I guess we should just move on a little bit and talk about, I guess, some other Android things that happened this week. One thing that happened was our Kyle has been digging into something for a while now, which is touchless Chrome for what seems to be touchless Android, which we still don't have any direct proof that touchless Android is a thing, but it seems non-debatable, whatever you want, at this point, because he's literally managed to, with the help of another developer, managed to enable touchless Chrome in an Android emulator and got it running, which was pretty impressive to see.
So we saw a version of Chrome on this touchless Android, which of course Google would want a Chrome browser on low end of on feature phone devices. But I'm very curious to know what this operating system actually is, and to see Google go into the feature phone market when they already work closely with a OS called KaiOS. So I'm very curious to see what a Google feature phone looks like, and are they just offering the OS, or are they going to make a feature phone? Because that would be into.
Yeah, definitely. I do think that in this case, though, this is just a case of Google doing everything, and I doubt. If I were to bet, I would say that this is not actually going to be something that they release. I think it's just Google experimenting.
Yeah.
So that's happened. The Galaxy Fold situation, we also got an update on this week, which is apparently now in a place where Samsung has resolved the design problems that they had. And I have a hard time believing it.
Yeah. Because, okay, so, yeah, they should have put the screen protector under the screen and not made it easy to remove by the average user. And they should have also minimized how dust can enter the device. But I guess the real question here, and what everybody wants to know, is how durable this thing is. Fix all the other issues and see how many folds and unfolds this device can do on an average day for an average person. So I guess that's what everybody wants to know here, of how durable and whether this foldable OLED screens are a viable technology.
Yeah, I think another part of this, I mean, so I kind of chronicled this on my Twitter this week, how for the last two or three months, it's just been back and forth from various reports. Samsung CEO says this, report out of Korean media says this, Samsung random employee says this, source says this. And it's always been, for the last few months, it's kind of been back and forth, like, Galaxy Fold is ready, Galaxy Fold is not ready, Galaxy Fold, all issues are now resolved, Galaxy Fold is nowhere near being fixed and ready. And so, yeah, it's just been a very back and forth situation. And this latest report, apparently, it's all resolved. But I wonder if part of this report coming out, and I think this report was this report based on something the CEO said? I can't remember. I don't think so. But it's ironic that this report came out right around the same time that Trump came out and said that he was going to back down on the Huawei blacklist. That's a whole other part of this conversation, is that Huawei is trying to compete and with the Galaxy Fold, and Samsung does not want to be beaten to the punch.
Yep. So I guess that game is back on, isn't it? Competition.
It is.
A technological prowess competition.
Yeah, so another thing on the Android front that happened this week, you wrote about, or Dylan wrote about.
Yes.
Dylan wrote about Fast Share.
Yes. Fast Share is this feature that, Android Beam is going away with Android Q, and this old NFC-based system that was introduced with Ice Cream Sandwich, you could tap phones back-to-back, and you can share rings and photos and whatnot that way. It was a cool feature from 2010, 11 or something. So with that going away, it makes sense for Google to work on a replacement. And what Google is working on is called Fast Share. It's built into Google Play services, so it won't be limited to Android Q. It'll have backwards compatibility with so many more devices. And basically, it uses Wi-Fi sharing. It you connect to a device near you. Your device appears to create a Wi-Fi hotspot to transfer files directly and very quickly. You can start sharing from the share menu, the standard system share menu. You can share links, images, all that kind of stuff. Fast file transfer, basically. It's a lot like Files Go, which is Google's an app that Google built for the next billion users for developing markets. So we know in principle the technology and the implementation works. And now Google is just bringing it to so many more users with Fast Share.
Yeah, to me, this actually is more of an explanation for Android Beam going away rather than, you know, like yes. When that got deprecated, I thought, you know, it was just odd, but now that seeing that I'm assuming they've been working on this for a while, and so now seeing that Android Beam was going away makes a lot more sense, especially since I know there's lots of fanboys out there, but I'm pretty sure no one ever used Android Beam.
No, people accidentally activated it, and it was always a wild ride.
Oh man,
it's still styled like Hollow. They never updated it, so there's this like spacey swing shot effect when you tap your phone. It's quite a wild experience. I encourage everybody to try it out before it dies in queue. But so this is a replacement to Android Beam, but I guess the real feature that it's bringing to Android is an AirDrop competitor, which is on iOS and Macs, can quickly share files. And honestly, that is a really good experience for iOS device, for Apple devices. And with Fast Share, Google has something that can go between Android, Chrome OS. They mentioned the watches and even iOS devices. So we're unclear on how that works on other devices beyond Chrome OS right now. But it just shows how expansive this can be and how this can.
Do we have any evidence that it will be supported in Chrome browser?
I'm not sure about Chrome browser.
I would, because I think that would be really great. I mean, so like, one of the big things is like moving files between your phone and the desktop.
Yeah.
And you can run the Chrome browser on anything. And so being able to quickly send photos or files from your device through Fast Share from your phone to the Chrome browser on a Mac or a desktop, that'd be great.
Awesome.
I don't know if there's any security things again the way of making that possible.
Yeah.
At an OS level. I don't know.
Especially since Chrome doesn't have underlying access to in the way AirDrop has system level access. So yeah. It's unclear how that would work, but it would presumably work with Chromebooks since Google controls the entire thing end to end.
Yeah. Sure.
How many people use AirDrop is my question though.
Oh man, it's actually I think everyone uses it. For sure. Mm-hmm. I think even beyond that, it's actually picking up steam. Have you seen these stories about...
Yes.
Yeah, so like random people airdropping people stuff in like public places on like planes and like public transport and stuff like that. So AirDrop is like, it's like a known thing. Like it's widely used and it's, you know, if I said, you know, to my mom, hey, I'm going to AirDrop something to you, I think she would know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Where, you know, if I said, I'm going to Android beam you something.
Give me a phone. What are you doing to my phone?
I think there's a level of cultural awareness of what AirDrop is.
Yeah, it's a meme.
And it also just works really well. I use it a lot for moving. I mean, honestly, whenever I'm listing stuff on Craigslist or eBay or whatever, I will only take photos with my iPad or iPhone because I know I can quickly single tap AirDrop them to my desktop for putting up the listing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the alternative is, you know, taking it with my Pixel or whatever and automatically it uploading to Google Photos, me going to photos.google.com on my desktop and downloading it from there, and maybe they're a motion photo and maybe they download in the wrong file format, and you know, it's like that's just a headache.
So, and again, it's just odd that it's not built into Google Photos. I feel like the Photos team would want an end-to-end experience as well of controlling devices, but I guess it does make sense on a system level feature.
Yep. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this for sure.
Yeah. Again, it's not Android tied. It doesn't appear to be tied to Android Q. It works on Pi successfully, so we might be seeing it sooner than later.
All right. Well, let's move on to I guess the attention grabbing headline that probably has people listening to the show right now on YouTube. If there's anyone, I don't even know. I can't. For some reason, the Hangouts on Air does not show live viewers anymore, so I'm not even sure how many people are watching, if any. Looks like about 20 so people, but yeah. So we're going to talk a little about Pixel 2 or Pixel Book 2, not Pixel 2. And there's been a lot of speculation about Pixel Book 2. It kind of goes all the way back to summer of last year. When our Kyle dug up two different prototypes, one being Nocturne and the other being Atlas, in codenames that he found in the Chromium repository. As many of you probably know, Nocturne ended up being the Pixel Slate, as we expected, especially in the weeks going up to the event. And one of the things that tipped us off about that was, I think, processor and some of the keyboard layout things and some other minor details that Kyle was able to glean from Chromium. And one other device that kind of shared many similarities was a device codenamed Atlas, which we don't know what it is or what it's going to be. We had had a little bit of a peek at a photo of it a little while back, and it didn't really look like a Google hardware device to us.
No, it did not.
Although Google's hardware design language, I don't have any changes, so I have no idea. We can't write anything off because it's even the Pixel Slate before it was announced didn't look like Google hardware to me, so who knows. But anyways, we got a tip a couple weeks ago and we've been trying to corroborate it for a couple weeks, pinging people and just trying to confirm anything we could. But unfortunately, with this specific tip, we haven't been able to confirm anything. And that's why you haven't heard anything about Pixel Book 2. And Pixel Book 2.
Yeah, it's...
From us.
Mm.
And this person, well, first of all, this person has told us some things about the tablet situation, which I won't get into detail on, but basically the gist of that whole situation is apparently that Google just didn't have like a really good like selling point for its upcoming tablets. And so that might be why, or by selling point, I mean a compelling reason for Google to be doing tablets, and a compelling way that Google might be able to compete with, you know, the Microsofts and the Apples. And it seems like the story is nothing about the tablets that are currently in development were being sold to Google as anything compelling. It seems like whoever was higher up making the decisions about these things, presumably Rick and others, saw the tablets that were in the works and just said, there's nothing that is unique enough about these to make them have any real chance of competing in the market, especially in the wake of kind of the failure that was the Pixel Slate. So that's the situation on that. Another interesting part of this tip is that it seems like, according to this person who has given us reliable information in the past, but not reliable enough that we're willing to just share or write everything they tell us without trying to confirm it or corroborate with other people first. They've said that there is now an increased focus on high-end hardware laptops at Google. And it's not that they're trying to compete directly with kind of like the ultrabook laptops. But they are trying to see how they can build a Chromebook that reaches a market of people who are doing more offline stuff and not as much always online. People who are doing their work primarily offline, which to me sounds like, programmers is one big thing. We already see that Google is building in Linux support and making Chromebooks a potential actual like development platform. And they've built Android Studio for Chrome OS. And, you know, so they're doing things like that. So this trend is already visible. But this source says that Google is being intentional about really doubling down on this trend as a whole. So with that, they also told us that, yes, indeed, the Pixel Book 2 is coming this fall, and that would be this probably October, if the made by Google hardware tradition keeps up. We will see an early October launch, and so yeah, we don't know anything about it, but this tipster seems to be very well aware that Pixelbook 2 is happening. And I don't remember, but do you remember if the Nikkei report from earlier this year said anything about Pixelbook? Because the Nikkei report tried to outline everything that was coming, and I don't think it did, if I remember correctly. So,
it did not. There was
apparently they were not privy to this information, or this tipster is wrong. So I don't know. Anyways, do we want to drop the name of the code name that we've heard for this?
The code name.
Yes.
Wait. Am I not privy to this?
Wait, I thought we heard a code name. Didn't we hear a code name that was not Atlas recently?
Oh.
Yes, okay.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think there's any harm in just dropping this. It's not like we're... I mean, I've tried to confirm it, so...
If we can find it.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Albus. Albus Dumbledore.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got a tip that Albus, A-L-B-U-S, is the code name for the Pixel Book 2. And we don't know, but...
It's a departure.
It is. It would be a departure from other code names we've had. But yeah, so now it's out there. Pixel Book 2 might be Albus, but we don't know. We'll just leave that there. And if anyone wants to, we've known that for about 2 weeks, and we've been digging in Chromium, and we've been digging in Android open source project, and we've been digging in everything we know to dig in, and have not found any references to Albus quite yet, which is, if it is a Chrome OS laptop, it's odd for that code name not be out yet, or visible in any way. However, we do know that there are different levels of code name at Google. So the code name that this device has in Chromium or will have in Chromium might not be the same code name that this person is aware of. There is, yeah. So, like, for example, sometimes in apps, Like, for instance, the Google Home app, they may refer to an unreleased device such as the Google Home Mini as a name, and then, you know, development teams working on, you know, the software side of things might refer to it by a different code name. So that's just one example of, we may never see this code name in any public way at all, but so it's there. And if anyone knows anything about Pixelbook 2 or would like to share information about so-called Albus, be sure to drop us a line. We'll be glad to hear anything you might have to say. So anyways, we don't really know anything about, but that's the initial info drop. Apparently Pixelbook 2 is coming this year and might be codenamed Albus. So yeah.
Again, like, since we've only seen Atlas, we don't know where this is going yet. The high end is obvious. I think everybody would be happy with a repeat of the Pixelbook, but at the same time, while Google does get praise for the Pixelbook, how many people actually have Pixelbooks, average regular users? It's very popular in the enterprise context of companies buying Pixelbooks for the end users, but beyond that, we just don't know how popular it is.
It should,
and whether Google is okay with making a device that gets rave reviews, but not doesn't really sell that well.
That's like the curse of Google. It's like that's the Pixel curse. Yeah, Pixel 3, Pixel, all three Pixels have gotten really good reviews.
Yeah,
I sell zero units.
The Pixel 3 is a good device. It's the best Pixel ever. It really does baffle me and why it doesn't get any love, especially design-wise.
I just think there's, like, even with the amount of marketing that Google's putting in, it's just not enough to crack. It's not enough to crack the decades-long ingrained understanding that Apple and Samsung are the two phone makers in the United States. There's a decade of that being, like, built in and ingrained in the American consumer's mind that you either get an iPhone or a Samsung. And I just don't think that Google or anyone else really has been proven by how awful every Android OEM except Samsung sells generally.
Yeah,
it's just really hard to crack that duopoly, I think. And
Google's and in the early in the very early days of the smartphone, Google's marketing message was rooted by the Nexus brand, and they really started from scratch here. Pixel
started from scratch a decade later, literally a decade.
Yeah, in earnest.
Yeah, it's like Google was like, it would be as if they just never tried to enter the smartphone market for the first 10 years. Meanwhile, Samsung and Apple have definitely asserted their dominance over the space, and now Google's saying, "Hey, us too. We make good phones too." And it's true, they do, and they have the best camera, and they, you know, have really good software. I think really polished software. Although Samsung, unfortunately, has been catching up on that front. But yeah, it's just, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And the Pixelbook kind of suffers the same fate, where it's like,
everybody loves it.
Gets rave reviews, but when people think I'm going to buy a laptop for school, it's at the point now where it's like either you buy a MacBook is obviously the king when it comes to the market that Google probably wants to reach with the Pixelbook, which is students.
Absolutely.
And obviously, I think Surface and Microsoft's first party hardware has some footing. And that took many years, by the way. It's been over 5 years since the Surface RT launched.
So the question, so
time flies.
Historically, I distinctly remember that Surface RT launched. I remember where I was in that press conference. Microsoft held that press conference. I remember reading a live blog of that press conference, and I remember being saddened and shook that it wasn't a courier. I digress. But actually, So, like you were saying, Google was right. If we 7 years of Nexus and Google only start in earnest on the 8th year of the Pixel, is this going to happen with the Pixel book and the Pixel slate for the tablet strategy? Is Google going to wake up 5 years from now and realize, oh crap, we need a tablet strategy. We need a real tablet strategy because this is how people are using their computers now.
I don't know. I think that if they were envisioning that they were going to be back into tablets 5 years from now, I think that they would be continuing to invest right now.
Yeah, file and error.
And the longer it goes, the harder it is, because hardware is not just like you can't just develop hardware in a vacuum. You have to build and then learn and then build based on what you learn and then build and then learn and then build and then learn. It's a positive feedback loop. And that's why Apple is at the point of maturity that they're at with the iPad line and just iPad software in general. You know, it doesn't just come overnight. Like, this is 7 years of not giving up on tablets, even amidst the iPad peaking and then, you know, kind of plateauing over the last 4 years. They still kept doubling down and investing year after year after year. And then they ended up with the iPad Pro, the current iPad Pro. And it is just not even, it doesn't even have a competitor, really.
Heck, Google would love to have the $329 iPad as their hardware. Like Apple just, like, they can do that from the parts bin increasingly. And not beyond Google, any company would love to have that. At that a hardware that's $329 that's good, that has a good display, powerful processor, and all that. Any company would kill for that combo. Yeah.
So that's why I think Rick has an understanding of that. Like, I think that Google's approach to hardware before Rick was very scattershot and just kind of like, we'll just drop an experiment here, drop $1 million here and see if we can build a tablet, drop $1 million here and do a partnership with LG and just taking shots in the dark. And I think Rick has an understanding that if they're going to do hardware, they have to actually do hardware. And so to me, this decision of them, first of all, this decision that they made to cancel the tablet lineup for future years was surprising to me. I'm actually literally on this show, like a few weeks before that happened, made the case that they wouldn't do that, at least not for a couple more years. And so the fact that they made that decision under Rick is much different than, you know, doing the Pixel C and being like, oh, we're just not going to do tablets for a while. That's very different from Rick coming in and saying, yeah, this is the investment, the ROI is just not going to be here. To me, with Rick's leadership coming in and saying no more tablets, I think that really means, I think that really means no more tablets.
It's that. Yeah, so like the big issue, so everything that made like Google does has to be taken in the context of they have to start returning a profit soon. Yeah. And we've heard this 5-year timeline for made by Google. They start with phones, then at the end of the five, Rick Ostro and company had a 5-year vision for the hardware, and as it's nearing the 4th year, they have to start showing some returns. So I guess the question is, if that financial pressure to return wasn't up in the air, would Google keep on investing and learning and iterating on how to do tablet hardware?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, maybe that was part of Rick's calculus. Maybe Rick literally has hard lines in the sand that he has to meet to be able to keep the hardware division, even to keep his job. You know, like, he may have literally like, you need to see this much profit by this date. And he may be under pressure to be like, yeah, if that's the case, if this is literally my livelihood and this is literally the continued existence of Google doubling investing in hardware, at least in the way they are now, like,
yeah,
when it comes to phones and tablets and laptops and stuff, I think the Google Home has already proven itself. I think even if Sundar came in and said, yeah, no more hardware division, I think the Google Home would live on, for example, just like the Chromecast or other things. But I think if Rick feels the pressure of like, I need to show a good bottom line in 2 years, that might have been part of the decision to cut tablets.
Yeah.
So
in a way, like Stadia could help alleviate those pressures.
Or it could hurt.
Or it could hurt the R&D.
Really, he's making a big Google service.
Yeah, service hard device. What is it? Devices and services is his official title now. It's the title of the hardware division. And yeah, this is a big bet. Yeah. So,
well, I think that's a pretty good conversation, and we'll pick it up again next week. And hopefully by next week or within a few weeks, we'll have a little bit more information on Pixelbook and hopefully a little bit more information on Google's entire hardware lineup going into this fall, because right now is around the time that stuff starts really starting to pour in. So we're looking forward to it.
Oh, the last time you said that, we saw the Pixel Google tweet out a picture of the Pixel 4 week, right?
The last time I said that, I was much more specific. I said this will be the week that the Pixel 4 leaks in its entirety, and it happened. This time I'm just saying I'm feeling like we're gonna start seeing some more stuff, but not sure what. Anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Till next week, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week we record this podcast. In the summer it's been pretty scattershot, but we'll be back onto a regular schedule in a month or two. And we'll publish the day after the podcast goes live. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Podcast, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. I'm just going to drop a quick line for anyone that's watching. Be sure to go follow us on Twitter at ABC Scoop. We're just trying to build that following and engage with you more. Drop us questions, drop us comments, let us know how we're doing. Also, be sure to check.
And
what's up?
This is more like a survey question, but tell us what you think if we stream this podcast on Twitch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's one thing we're thinking about, because we're going to have to move to something. We may just keep it on YouTube, but Twitch is definitely an option.
Yeah.
Another thing is, if you really enjoy the show in any way, head over to whatever podcasting app you use.
iTunes.
iTunes most that's not primarily. Right. And give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review of some kind. That would be really, really helpful. We really appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in as always. And thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you next week.